on mood-altering substances. One sign is when a person consumes a greater quantity of alcohol or drugs than they originally planned. And if the individual resolves to cut back and finds they can't, there's probably a problem. Another warning sign is when someone spends a lot of time simply buying booze or drugs, or gives up important activities in pursuit of getting high. If there's nothing wrong, why is this assumed such importance? Alcohol and drugs have become problems, by definition, if they interfere with a person's everyday responsibilities, like work and household duties. And you're in trouble with chemicals if you continue to consume them in spite of adverse consequences, like emotional or physical conditions that are worsened by substance abuse. A further symptom is increased physical tolerance, such that it takes more booze or more cocaine, for example, to achieve the same effect as in the past. That means your body has become habituated. Finally, if you cease getting high, then find yourself starting up again, you probably need to get help. With Sobering Thoughts, I'm David Freudberg.
Come here, woman. 'Cause I'm talking to you.
It's 8 minutes after 10 o'clock, and you're listening to Brain Damage.
Does anybody here remember Berlin? Remember how she said that we would meet again some sunny day?
This is your program, Moscow Mailbag. Well, Joe, time for more questions. And Jock Irvin of Concord, New Hampshire writes, I would like to hear a man-in-the-street type of program in which people in the street would voice their opinion.
Jock, we do have such programs, not too often, but we do. But I'll give you some very accurate public opinion as a result of officially conducted polls. A question that was asked was, do you think we should allow private ownership of land? 96% answered yes. Do you fully approve Gorbachev's activity? Only 29% answered yes. When do you think we will extricate ourselves from the current crisis? 48% believe by the end of the year 2000 or later. Questions about the winter, the coming winter. Do you think Mikhail Gorbachev will quit the post of president? 74% answered, hardly probable. Will Yeltsin this winter quit the post of head of Russia's parliament? 77% answered hardly probable. Will the military and the KGB take over? 49% answered hardly probable. 32% were undecided. Will there be mass hunger in the next 6 months? 57% said no. Will the disintegration of the USSR begin in the next 6 months? 44% said yes. 22% were undecided. Which of the following names will be important, mind you, to our people in the year 2000? Who do you think took first place? 58% voted for this name. Jesus Christ. Sakharov got 48%, Lenin 36%, Stalin, 9.
David Keith Callender of Richmond, Kentucky. What do you think of the bald eagle of the USA?
The bald eagle? Well, what do you think of the proverbial Russian bear? I think that now that we stand together on many burning issues and stand together on disarmament, now that we're partners, I think the eagle and the bear make a formidable pair.
David also wants to know what the most treasured artifact is in the Soviet Union.
You know, you got me there. I can only guess. Well, what is an artifact? An artifact is something brought to light by archaeologists. Maybe the beautiful articles made of gold, and they're really beautiful, from the Scythian burial mounds. They date back to the beginning of the 4th century B.C., incidentally, they were exhibited in the United States. Or maybe the artistic collection of bronze and ironware, of ceramics and cuneiform writing of the 6th and 7th centuries B.C., which were found in the fortress of Teishebaini in Armenia. Who knows what is more precious?
Joseph Miranda of Grand Island, New York, has a question which I would be interested in knowing as well. What do I have to do in order to have lunch or dinner at the restaurant on the corner of Arbat Street? We were able to get in, make it to the second floor, but in a very polite way we were told that no tables were available for a few hours, when really there were plenty of tables available.
Hi, Joe. Always glad to answer your questions. You asked me what to do. Well, I won't give you any advice, but I'll tell you what happened to me and an American friend in that very same restaurant. This was his second visit to the Soviet Union. He invited me, as I've said, to the very same restaurant, which has very many well-appointed rooms and halls. What did he do? He just slipped the man in charge a 25-ruble note, and the table immediately appeared. On another occasion, in that very same restaurant, with that very same friend of mine, after the entrance fee, as I call it, the bill for the two of us was 70 rubles. My friend gave the waiter a 100-ruble note and got no change. I calmly said to the waiter, because this made me mad, I said to the waiter, "Tell me, don't they give change at this restaurant?" The change immediately appeared. 25 rubles entry fee, 30 ruble tip. Isn't that a bit too much?
Mm-hmm. Nicholas Peter Adams of Newark, New Jersey. Has the USSR increased its production of oil for sale worldwide in view of the crisis in the Gulf at the moment?
We expect to produce less oil this year than last year and much less than the year before. There are two reasons. Well, first of all, our equipment is old. Then there's the lowering of reserves of oil at the former highly productive wells or deposits. They're becoming exhausted. Our export of oil for hard currency was more or less the same in the past 9 years. And Western experts say there is no way we could increase output at our wells, which are working at full capacity as it is. Western experts also tell us we could gain something like $6 or $7 billion because of the rise in the cost of oil as a result of the Persian Gulf crisis. But this gain would be completely annulled by the fact that Iraq owes us $6 or $10 billion for the arms that we unfortunately supplied it with.
Does the USSR have a large supertanker fleet?
Well, what would you call a supertanker? How many tons? We have many up to 150,000 tons. I'll name only a few: the Kuban, the Kuzbass, the Sovetskaya Neft. Then there are the Krim or Crimea type vessels of 142,000 tons. The Marshal Grechko is 142,000 tons, Marshal Konev, 105,000 tons, and so on. There are many tankers of just under 100,000 tons.
An interesting question here, Joe, from Douglas Parker of Fairmont, West Virginia, and Verrill Stahlberg, I hope I pronounced that correctly, of Bellingham, Washington. And they both want to know, what is the future of Radio Moscow?
Well, they tell us the North American service will be integrated into the world service. It'll be part of it. There will be no parallel broadcasting to North America, for instance, by the world service and by the North American service. Then I heard that the number of hours of English broadcasts in general may be cut. There is talk of a cut in the staff of Radio Moscow. When I say Radio Moscow, I mean our external broadcasts in all languages, something like 67 all told. You know, in the States, I met a top official of Radio Free Europe, and I said to him, "You ought to be out of work." He said, "Why?" "Because there's no one left to free anymore, is there?"
"Congratulations to Mr. Gorbachev upon receiving the Nobel Peace Prize," writes Mark Coombs of Denton, Texas.
Well, thank you, Mark. I sincerely believe that Mr. Gorbachev deserves the prize. I've said this before. After all, there were these changes in Eastern Europe, the end of the Cold War, which made the United States and the Soviet Union partners. And I think we owe all this primarily to him, although some may not agree. Though, of course, the housewife would like him to get a prize for economy, which would give us more food and consumer goods. Incidentally, Mr. Gorbachev, speaking of the prize, got an Italian Fuji Prize, and together with the Nobel Prize and the royalties for his book Perestroika, what he got amounted to over $2 million. And then he got over 1 million rubles, all of which he donated to children's hospitals, to hospitals in general, especially for children who suffered in the zones of ecological disaster. Most of the money, of course, will go to buy medical equipment. Now, there was a very simple, and I would call it a low-key ceremony of handing over the money, which was shown on television. And he even joked before handing the money over. "I'm a millionaire," he said.
Over to Michigan now, a letter from Charles Bell of Lang's Inn. What has happened to your ideals of total employment, inexpensive foodstuffs, cost-free higher education, competent public medical care? Will these goals be respected in the new system?
Well, you know, this story of total employment, I'm afraid, was a propaganda ploy. After all, there are millions of unemployed up and down the country here today. Not because their labor is not needed or there is nothing to do, but because the right industries, the right services and jobs were not opened in the right places. After all, there's so very much to do in our country, and if because of automation, of cutting back unnecessary staff, some are temporarily left jobless, the problem is retraining for other jobs, and we're doing that. In Moscow, we have something like, listen to this, 126,000 unemployed. And, strange as it may seem, there are 123,000 job vacancies in Moscow. As for basic foodstuffs, for the time being, they will be inexpensive until things straighten out. The lower income brackets will be compensated and are being compensated. Of course, in time, we will release the prices, and they will be subject to the market economy. Free education, that is, higher education, of course, will remain free. Medical care will also remain free, but it has to be radically improved. Some say we should have some hospitals that charge a nominal price for an operation. Like, for instance, Professor Fedorov, the eye specialist, who charges only 40 rubles, which is about 4 days' average pay, for an eye operation. I think that's fair.
Rick Deck of Fremont, California. Splitting up your country will not help. Working with each other will. Our country tried it back in 1860, and look what we had, a civil war.
You know, Rick, our mass media, our members of parliament, Mr. Gorbachev, are all stressing that the need, there's a crying need for cooperation, unity, mutual aid, with, of course, the maximum of political and economic sovereignty. Can you imagine every state in the Union, that is your country, declaring its independence and sovereignty, refusing to supply other states, yet demanding that they supply it? Imagine every state in the Union setting up its customs, setting up its army, its airlines, its own currency. Where would the United States be? As for a civil war, well, there's talk about it. On and off. I personally don't think it'll come to that, but a major violence here and there, I think, is possible.
Thomas Likornik of Toronto, Ontario. And there is Joe Adamoff assuring us that the KGB is being depoliticized even as he speaks.
Thomas, you know, I really felt hurt. I don't quite understand the reason for the sarcasm in your letter. Not that I haven't been criticized before. Like I made believe I couldn't pronounce the word depoliticized. Now, I did not say the KGB was depoliticized. I was saying it's being depoliticized. But you cannot deny that the first steps in that direction are being taken. The KGB are not the machine of bloody, uncalled for repressions of innocent people that they were at one time. Today, they have a department for rehabilitation of the victims of those awful days. Who could have imagined, Thomas, a monument opened practically on their doorstep to commemorate the innocent victims? Or just the other day, a procession with icons and church banners right on that very same square, opposite the KGB building, with several thousand people participating and a religious service held for the victims. What is that a sign of? There are no arrests of innocent people today, and no healthy people being sent to psychiatric asylums like under Brezhnev and Andropov, or dissidents arrested and deported. Now, what is that a sign of? Would the phenomenon of KGB Major General Kalugin be possible formerly? More, he was elected deputy to parliament, and I welcome this. He even took the prime minister and the head of the KGB to court. He sued them. They now have a public relations department. And what do you know? United States congressmen were received within the building for a press conference. No one entered that building before unless he was arrested. Today, the KGB is under the Congress of People's Deputies, under the President, and our Parliament, the Supreme Soviet. They report regularly to our Parliamentary Committee on Defense and State Security. Besides, they're checked by the prosecutor's office. And today, the top officials of the KGB are not okayed by the Central Committee of the party as was formerly. Changes, my friend, have taken place. Today, the KGB are being put to good use, I think, fighting organized crime, fighting economic crimes, fighting corruption and violence in all forms, wherever it may appear. And we are threatened with violence. Of course, much still lies ahead, but you can't deny the fact that depoliticization has begun.
Peter Fowler, Pointe-Claire, Quebec, and Tom Hardin of Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, your questions will be answered in next week's show, so stay tuned. Okay, that was Joe Adamoff there answering your questions on Moscow Mailbag. Don't forget to address your letters to Radio Moscow, that's the North American service, Moscow, the USSR. You couldn't do better than write us that letter. Your comments on this show are welcome. Don't forget, Mailbag is on the air every Saturday, Sunday and Wednesday on the East Coast at 2310, 0110 and 0310 UTC, and on the West Coast at 410, 610 and 810 UTC.
And if you decide to write a letter to Radio Moscow, make sure you mention that you heard it here on WUSB in Stony Brook. Again, their address is Moscow Mailbag, care of Radio Moscow, Moscow, the USSR. It's 27 minutes after 10 o'clock. It's Eric Corley with Brain Damage. This is a special edition of Brain Damage, as we're not going to be doing any tripods or things like that, but pretty much sticking to the topic of the day. And if you don't know what that is, hit yourself on the head real hard, and then maybe it'll come to you. And if that doesn't work, stay tuned, because we'll bring it right to your door. 450,000 of them. It's 29 minutes after 10 o'clock, and we're just about 1 minute away from a rather special presentation. Watching the Senate hearings last night, and the House hearings, too, watching both of them at the same time is kind of interesting. But there was one particular speaker that I thought really brought things home. That was Representative Lauren Smith, Democrat in the House of Representatives from Florida. And what we're going to do is we're going to play what he said last night at about 4 o'clock in the morning. You know something is important when the House and the Senate are both talking about the same thing at 4 o'clock in the morning. And when they both get back together at 8 the next day. So we're going to be getting into that in just about a minute. And first, let's take a quick look at the headlines. Catch everybody up on just what's going on out there. President Bush is praising Congress for sending a clear signal that Iraq cannot scorn the January 15th UN deadline to get out of Kuwait. Both houses of Congress voted resolutions authorizing Bush to use force against Iraq if it does not withdraw. That's what all the debate was about. And both houses of Congress have, in effect, given the okay to go to war. Kuwait's UN ambassador applauded the congressional vote. The ambassador, Mohammed Abul Hassan, again appealed for Iraq to pull out of Kuwait, saying every minute of delay is a minute closer to the war. Iraq says its parliament has been summoned to an emergency session on Monday, one day before the January 15th UN deadline for Iraq to leave Kuwait or face possible attack. There are no further details on the emergency session. And the last six American diplomats in Baghdad lowered the U.S. Embassy flag and flew to Germany today. They were the latest in a growing exodus of foreigners from the Iraqi capital ahead of Tuesday's deadline. And also, of course, as we know, people are being evacuated from Israel as well as other countries in the Mideast as the world prepares for what could be an extremely nasty series of events and series of uncontrollable events. It's something which was brought yet closer today. We witnessed the failure of the talks in Geneva, or the series of threats in Geneva. Didn't get anywhere. Stock markets slipped, and people got real depressed. Well, today, it's a good thing the stock market wasn't open. Let's put it that way. Okay, it's 10:32. We're going to get into that speech first, though, a program promotion.
I'm gonna lay down my sword and shield and down my river and study
January 13th from 6 to 10 p.m. and January 19th from 12 noon to 5 p.m. WSB Stony Brook will be broadcasting WBAI Pacifica Radio's Countdown in the Gulf, War or Peace, National Teach-In on the Gulf Crisis. From 6 to 10 p.m. and January 19th, 12 noon to 5 p.m.
Yes, that's tomorrow night at 6, so tune in. It's one of a series of programs that we're going to be presenting. And times like this, you know, people really see the value of non-commercial radio. Stay tuned to USB. There are some exciting times ahead. Okay, now on to last night's, or actually this morning's, speech by Representative Lauren Smith of Florida. It was quite a scene last night. The Republicans just stopped speaking altogether, and the Democrats kind of wound it up, and almost every single one of them spoke out against The bill that was passed today, the bill authorizing the United States to use force starting, I guess, Tuesday or Wednesday, whichever day you happen to think the deadline falls on. And I thought his speech, which was the last one, was the most eloquently phrased, the most emotional. And, you know, I know that a lot of people listen to this program who are of draft age or who are soon to be of draft age. And it's important to realize that just because there isn't a draft today does not mean there's not going to be one next week. Those of you who read newspapers might have seen an article over the last couple of weeks in some various papers, actually, saying that the draft is now capable of being enacted overnight. They could decide tonight, hey, there's a draft, and your mailgram could be on its way tomorrow. They have a whole lot of people employed to do nothing but this, and they're waiting. They have rooms set up. They have it all in place. They can do it overnight. No kidding. And we've come a long way since the last time there was a draft. A long way. What is it, 20 years now? It's been a long time, and they've learned quite a bit. So something to consider. Now, those of you who are doing other things, you might want to listen to this, because I happen to think it's pretty damn important. And we'll be taking listener feedback afterwards, as always, and finding out what else is going on.
Mr. Speaker, first let me thank you for the patience and work that you've done this evening in presiding over this debate, and thank the gentleman from California and the others who have presided on the Republican side of the aisle. Let me also at the outset compliment the freshman class, both Republicans and Democrats. I am truly impressed by the level of their commitment to their positions, the level of the debate which they have engaged in, and the force of their conscience, which came through the presentations made by each and every one of them. I think it's wonderful, and I'm proud to be a member of this body, which just renewed itself in the election cycle with so many good members who bode well for the future of this institution. Mr. Speaker, with this right hand, I voted in 1983 for a resolution allowing the President of the United States to send a peacekeeping force into Lebanon. I thought I had a fairly good, suitable, relevant, legitimate amount of knowledge of the situation, which would allow me to make a rational and reasonable and logical decision. I voted with the President. I believed it was the right thing to do. The President assured us that these people, although they were in harm's way, would be in every way protected. These were young American servicemen. As far as I know, there was no single woman among them. One day in October of 1983, I woke up to find out that approximately 250 of them were dead in a heap in a building where they were bivouacked outside Beirut. 250 gone. To this day, I feel responsible. To this day and for all time, I shall remember that vote and rue the casting of that vote. Mr. Speaker, with this right hand, just last week, I and every member of this body took an oath to uphold the Constitution of the United States. I swore loyalty and made a commitment to the very basic requirement of the role of a congressman member to uphold the Constitution. I also privately swore after the October disaster in Lebanon and swore again to myself on this floor that I would never again make such a vote without having every single piece of relevant information that I deserved and every other member deserved in order to make a reasoned, rational, and proper vote on an issue of sending young men and women to war and to die, because people die in wars. It is not an abstract, nor are they disconnected occurrences. I do not support the Solars Michael resolution, firstly, for the reason that I firmly believe that no member of this body has been given by the executive branch, which is asking for this resolution, and it is to go to war, that no member of this body has been given all of the relevant information that is absolutely necessary for them to make a reasoned, logical, and sound, and conscionable vote. Maybe I am naive, Mr. Speaker, but I always believed that Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution, which says that the Congress shall have the power to declare war, had some legislative intent, some of the intent of the framers, somewhere in the ethereal space of the last 200 years that was definable. Oh, it's not definable in the Constitution. There are no A's and B's and C's of what a resolution of war really is. It doesn't say anything. It doesn't say how it's supposed to read. It doesn't say it's supposed to have a seal. It doesn't say it's supposed to have a ribbon. It doesn't say anything. But it reserves to the Congress that power. And so we improvise. The reality is, on the five occasions when war has been declared, they've been in different forms. But this time, we're not being asked to declare war. We're being asked to endorse to the president a resolution of the UN which calls for the use of force to remove Iraq from Kuwait. Now, I thought, as I said, maybe I'm naive, that if we were asked to declare war, that somehow that president asking for the declaration might perhaps come to Congress, ask for a secret session, look all four, 535 members in the eye, and say, this is what I'm asking. This is what we have done on each and every of the issues that are important for you to make an appropriate decision. This is what we expect that the body count might be, our best guesstimate. This is what our best guesstimate is, perhaps, of the duration. This is what our best guesstimate is of the cost of this war, economically speaking? This is what we believe may be left to do, or ideally, the president would say, there is nothing left to do, no diplomatic overtures which will work. We've tried everything, and we are stymied. Because, like you, the president would say, Mr. Speaker, I don't want to go to war either, except as the absolutely last option that we would have. And so the president would present the case. We would have what we consider to be all of the relevant information, and we would vote. But, Mr. Speaker, I guess I am naive. You see, the president hasn't done that. And we don't know this information, and I would bet that no one in this chamber or the other body has enough information to make that conscious decision. A cogent decision based on fact. And we're being asked yet, in light of that, to send young men and women of this country, my neighbors, daughters and sons and husbands and wives, and the same in every district, in every one of your elected congressional districts, off to war and off possibly to their death. And so that's the first reason I shall not vote for this. Because I don't believe we have any of the necessary evidence, any of the necessary facts given to us by the president. Now, I don't mean that in the negative sense. I don't think he's trying specifically to withhold information. It just hasn't been imparted. It might shock the American people to know that we don't know much more than they do when it comes to all of the information that we ought to know. But we don't. And I challenge members to stand up here and tell me they've gotten the estimates that I talked about a minute ago from the State Department or the Defense Department or the President. I'm not talking about firm figures. I'm not talking about guarantees. But we're being asked under our constitutional authority to grant that authority to the President, and we don't know any of this. Wouldn't it make a difference if we knew that the President and the Defense Department estimated 100,000 casualties as opposed to 1,000? It might to some. And they're entitled to know that. And so the first reason I will not vote for it is because we don't know enough of the anticipation and all the diplomacy and all of the facts and circumstances surrounding the president's decision to ask for it, to vote for it. The second reason I will not vote for it is because I don't believe it meets the constitutional test. It is, as other speakers have said, a Gulf of Tonkin resolution. It is not a direct request for a declaration of war. It is an indirect, open-end, blank check for the president to take from us the power and then decide at what point in the future he will use it, under what circumstances, at what time, thereby depriving us of what I consider to be the real intent of the framers of the Constitution, that we would declare war, but that means that it would be at a specific time, for a specific purpose, with specific players, under specific circumstances, then and there existing at that moment. Now, it is easy to do that when you have a catastrophic enormity of a calamity like Pearl Harbor. Boy, is it much easier to make a decision based on that kind. Don't envy the president his job. So the second reason I will not vote for it is I do not believe that constitutionally we should be voting on that type of resolution in lieu of a direct request for a declaration of war. The third thing is the reality of the situation in the field. We've heard pros and cons all night here about the efficacy of sanctions. But everyone, including General Powell, have testified, and General Schwarzkopf has told members of Congress that the sanctions are working. The gentleman from Missouri, Mr. Weed, indicated that he's getting weaker, not stronger. And he is getting weaker. His Air Force flies less reconnaissance sorties than they flew before because they are running low on spare parts. Parts in general are becoming difficult for him to obtain. His military machine is slowly but steadily being reduced. And yet, in the face of that, all of a sudden, we have a decision by the president to come and ask us to declare war at this moment, when we're watching our enemy, against whom this war would be waged, slowly strangling and getting less capable of putting up a fight than he was weeks and weeks and weeks ago. So the timing certainly is bad. But beyond that, the sanctions are having an effect on this whole country and this whole economy. And they are providing us with the capability of continuing the sanctions on a compounding effect to bring him to his knees. Now, those who argue that sanctions alone, as Mr. Webster has in his letter, I believe are correct. But Mr. Hamilton stood in this well and talked about the three strands of the sanctions and the force of the military might that's arrayed against him and the threat that it will be used and diplomacy. That is what has worked. But let's be very careful to realize that he has yet to blink. Even though 450,000 people, Americans, are there, and even though we have applied the sanctions, and even though the president has said up until last week when he sent us the letter asking for this resolution that he didn't need this, he could do this on his own, Saddam perhaps didn't believe him because he isn't out of Kuwait. What makes you think now that if we vote this resolution, miraculously, all of a sudden, Saddam is going to say, oh, that's what I was waiting for. The Congress says he should wage war, and so now it's over, I'm leaving. That is an awfully thin premise on which to posture a declaration of war. And it seems somehow strange and illogical to me to have the constant argument made that in order to avoid war, we shall declare war. That has never seemed to happen in the past. Not ever. He knows what our capability is. He chooses not to get out for his own reasons. The next reason I shall not vote for it is because it's premature. Now, I'm not one, frankly, who likes the Gephardt resolution all that much, in the sense that it is open-ended. It does give the president the right to come back any time he wants, and so he could come back next week. In that sense, the control is in the president's hands. By the same token, I would like the Congress to be on record that, frankly, we shouldn't go any further than about 30 days. And the reason I say that is because much of the testimony made by the military to the committees in the Congress and in this House was that the optimum date for any kind of offensive thrust against Iraq and against Saddam Hussein would be February 15th. The president, to quote him, has said, "In the quest for peace, I will go the extra mile." I commend him for what he's done already. And I might add, at this juncture, Mr. Speaker, I supported the president then. I supported the president in the interim, in the buildup of troops, and I support him now. We all want Saddam Hussein out of Kuwait Most of us would like to see Saddam Hussein removed as well. We know he's an international criminal, an international terrorist, a brigand, a murderer, all of the epithets. They all fit. We know it all, and we agree. But if you truly want to be a peacemaker, then you would walk a second extra mile. You would regard the advice and the testimony of your own military people and go to February 15th. Don't let the artificial date set by us, because we maneuvered the January 15th resolution, Resolution 678, in the United Nations, was ours. It didn't spring from the Somalians or from the Rhodesians or anyone else. It sprang from us. We should be willing to go that extra mile, thereby, for the president, foreclosing any further criticism, because he would have done everything he could have in order to be able to bring about a peaceful resolution, which we would all like to see. And so I think it's premature at this moment to be asking for this, even though it's in the wrong form, and I would hope that when he came back, he would ask for a declaration of war. Finally, we have to be very careful in any event, because we must find a peaceful solution, if it is at all possible, because of the enormity of what war will be. I don't know how many people understand the array of weapons that we have against Iraq. But I also don't know how many people understand what Iraq is capable of. I don't think his military prowess is all that great. He's a classic overestimator of his own capabilities. He went to war with Iran and lasted 8 years against an army that had no air force and hardly any real weaponry. So they're not exactly the prime military force in the world, in Iraq. But let me assure you, ladies and gentlemen, and I'm sad to say this, that the battle which will wage in Iraq and in Kuwait will not be the only battlefield on which Americans will be fighting and will be dying. This man is capable of any gross behavior, any immoral act is within his purview. He gassed his own people. And he didn't gas them by bombs, you know. He flew planes over like crop dusters and released that stuff in the air. He's killed people left and right by his own hand and at his direction. He's done unspeakable acts in Kuwait. But watch what happens when we attack him. If you think you've seen terrorist acts, you ain't seen nothing yet. He is capable of killing innocents around the world. And let me assure you, they'll be Americans' prime, first, and foremost targets. This capital is not without his range. And we'd better be very, very, very certain that before we enter into any course of conduct which will raise that specter of direct terrorist action against Americans, both domestically here and abroad anywhere, targets of opportunity for which I'm sure agents have already been assigned and are operating, waiting for the signal. We better be sure that we've explored every single avenue and every possible road for a peaceful solution. Finally, Mr. Speaker, what will post-war Iraq look like? When we attack Iraq, it will be with enormity. There will be an enormous amount of damage and loss of life to them, first and foremost. Because, again, the technological weaponry arrayed against him, I don't think anyone understands. It's bigger than what was assembled for D-Day. Bigger by leaps and bounds, by geometric proportion. And that will invite for the future an enormous power vacuum in Iraq. And that power vacuum will attract in the Syrians, the Iranians, and the Shiite fundamentalist Muslims, because that's the organized groups in that region who will take advantage of the death of the government of Saddam Hussein. And that is not going to be any better for us than what is there now, as sad as that is to say. And the possibility exists of a peacekeeping force having to be maintained there by the United States. If that's so, the chances are we may lose as many people in the peacekeeping due to terrorism as we might lose in the war. And I don't know how long Americans will sustain that either. And so the president ought to be thinking of all of these things. And perhaps he is, before he makes this decision to ask us for war. And we ought to be thinking of them before we make the decision to grant him that authority. The future of that region is important to us, but we have to ask ourselves the single most important question. Is this offensive war that is being asked for by the president necessary at this moment for the vital strategic interest and protection of the United States? And the answer is no. We are not at threat. We are not at risk. They are not on our borders. They have not attacked us. And until we can find a direct link, we better be careful about these Gulf of Tonkin resolutions and the kind of domino theory application which prevailed in Vietnam. Because that's what we're doing here without calling it the same thing. Saying that it's in our interest, our national interest, to free Kuwait of Iraq and somehow get rid of Saddam Hussein. And it is. But is it that interest which is controlling sufficient to commit Americans to die? Because they will. They will. We have to think long and hard about that. And I think we are a few steps away from that threshold. I think we are short of where we need to be in order to have to make that decision. And there are many more pieces of the puzzle that have to be fit in and put together. And I would urge you to consider the irony of this new world order, as the president calls it, having as its first act making war. I thought that was the old world order, and the new world order would be to resolve issues peacefully. We built hundreds of billions of dollars of weapons in the old world order and faced each other down. I thought the new world order was for the purpose of resolving things peacefully. That's how it started. We began to resolve our differences with the Soviet Union peacefully. I think it would be a terrible, tragic start for this new order if it began with a war. And I urge all of you to consider very carefully and not vote to go to war at this time. We all support the president in his goals. We all support the president in wanting to find a way to bring peace to the region. But none of us wants to commit young men and women of America for the purpose of war if there is any single other way available to us. We have not reached the time when we can make that statement. I don't believe either has the president. And so I would urge a no vote on the Solarz-Michael Amendment. And hopefully we would then be able to have the president say to us, I'm going the extra mile. maybe we can achieve peace. If it's worth going to war for, it's worth going to find peace for. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
That if God's on our side, he'll stop the next war.
She's wily. A photograph was taken. She waved a piece of paper in the air. Now the disco machine lives in Munich, and we are all friends. And I slip on my Italian dancing shoes as the evening descends. And the bell names, no matter who you claim to be, as innocent as babies, a mad dog with rabies, you're still a part of some conspiracy. Meanwhile, there's a light over the ocean, burning brighter than the sun. God, what have we done? And the bells take their toll once again in a victory chime.
That's Elvis Costello, Peace in Our Time. And we heard Speaker Representative Lawrence Smith of Florida speaking very early this morning, about 4 o'clock in the morning, speaking in a fruitless attempt to stave off the vote to use force in the Gulf. Now it looks like that's where we're headed. On the local level, after treating war veterans for stress disorders that in some have lingered for as long as 40 years, Dr. Michael Marino isn't looking forward to receiving a fresh group of physically and emotionally scarred soldiers from the Persian Gulf. But as Chief of Psychology Services for the Northport Veterans Affairs Hospital, Marino and other staff members said yesterday they are ready for the carnage that a war against Iraq might bring. The Northport Hospital is one of 22 VA hospitals on the East Coast designated to receive wounded soldiers if war breaks out. And while those hospitals, which also include the Bronx and Brooklyn VA medical centers, have been stocking supplies and sending staff to special seminars since the Department of Defense put them on alert August 29th, the reality is setting in that the United States is now only days away from the United Nations deadline. Marino says, I think we feel we know what we'd be up against since we've seen the long-term consequences of war. Not only the immediate physical consequences, we've seen how life is affected down the road. I think we take it very seriously because we know that indeed if there is a war, even when it ends, it's not over. That's something to say to the folks that seem so eager for it to begin. And there's an awful lot of them around. At least too many in the Senate today. The vote was 52-47. And even wider margin than that in the House. And, of course, I don't think the president is going to have any objections. Looking at the news, President Bush says even though Congress has authorized a military strike to purge Iraqi troops from Kuwait, it does not mean war is inevitable. Congress, in split votes today, passed resolutions allowing a military strike after the 15th, a deadline from the United Nations for Iraq to pull out. Of course, those of us with fairly longer than usual attention spans know that that deadline was pushed onto the United Nations by the United States. So it's really more a United States deadline. After all, I don't see Britain, I don't see France, I don't see all the other countries of the world saying, "Hey, you guys better hurry up and get out of Kuwait." It seems to be us doing most of the talking. You know, I mean, what's Canada doing? You know, what's Canada going to do on the 15th? It's nobody cares. It's just the United States versus Iraq. That's what it is. So the UN deadline is in language only. Let's face reality, folks. It's the U.S. deadline. the deadline, there's some discussion about this. In fact, if I can actually find the article that I'm referring to in today's paper somewhere. It's very rare that I find the actual article that I'm... I found it. How about that? The Bush administration said yesterday that the deadline for Iraqi President Saddam Hussein to withdraw his troops from Kuwait is midnight Tuesday, which is 8 a.m. Wednesday in the Persian Gulf. The U.N. Security Council resolution authorities authorizes force if the troops are not out by January 15th, but it offers no elaboration on the deadline, and questions arose on when the exact moment might be. Though administration officials have said the deadline doesn't mean a U.S. attack would necessarily begin immediately, Secretary of State Baker said yesterday in Saudi Arabia, just so there is no misunderstanding, let me be absolutely clear, we passed the brink at midnight January 15th. So that brought up the question of midnight in the Gulf, in Washington, some other time zone, what? Well, at first, U.S. officials said they weren't sure. But a few hours later, they said it was Tuesday night at midnight in the U.S. Eastern time zone. So, I mean, if it's a deadline, it seems like the deadline should be in the local time zone of whatever it is you're passing the deadline for. But coincidentally enough, it's a deadline for the United States. So, for those of you that think this is a UN action, I have my doubts. There are something like 10,000 people protesting in Berlin today against what the United States is about to do. Now, you have to wonder. First of all, you have to wonder why. And second of all, you have to wonder why you probably didn't hear about that. All right, let's continue with the AP news. A possible answer to all this could come during talks in Baghdad between the UN Secretary General Javier Perez de Cuellar and Iraqi President Saddam Hussein. And Secretary of State Baker plans last-minute talks with Turkish leaders for some reason. Syria's president has made a public appeal to Saddam to leave Kuwait. As President Bush decides whether to use force against Iraq. Soviet troops are reportedly using force against Lithuanians, but there's only so many hours in a day, folks. And just one more thing for just to round off this wonderful day. Police in New York are holding a white suspect in the stabbing of a black activist who was about to begin a march in Brooklyn. Reverend Al Sharpton is recovering from a knife wound to the chest. Police say he was wounded by a man who jumped from a crowd with a kitchen knife. The mostly white Bensonhurst section of Brooklyn was the scene of a killing of a black teenager in 1989, a case that inflamed racial tensions. Sharpton is reported in stable condition. Bensonhurst, however, is very unstable tonight, and there's going to be a continuation of the rally that Reverend Sharpton was going to be leading. It will be taking place tomorrow at 2, and I hope to see a lot of turnout from all different races so that this doesn't get to be a polarized issue. Obviously, something is extremely wrong in a neighborhood where you cannot lead a march down the street without getting stabbed. Okay. Cindy is here. Hello, Cindy.
Good evening, folks.
This is your first appearance on Brain Damage, I believe.
This is, quite in fact.
I think I made an appearance on every other show. Is this amazing or what, all this stuff going on?
I'm glad to see that this has been brought up in a lot of discussions here at the station other than, like, music talk and things of that nature. And Mort McCluskey on Monday from Critique and Unfinished Business and myself will be here tomorrow night along with a few other people who are deciding to show up at the station because it seems to be the general consensus here, I think, at the station that as a communication network, mm-hmm. okay, and we're serving of the public that we should do and have something to say to people about what's going on. And it's my general belief that if, you know, whatever you're doing on the 15th, I believe everyone should stop doing what they're doing except for, like, police and fire and hospital workers and really stand up and take a stand and, like, you know, Bob Marley says, get up and stand up and, you know, put an end to this. There's a lot more that we could be doing as citizens and people of this country to take physical action and stop what's going to go on, this actual killing. I mean, people, you know, once you get on that plane, you're in the service and you're on your way over there, you either have to do or die and wait till it's over. And let me tell you, you don't know how long it's going to be.
It's not a position I would very much like to be in. You know, I get this from a lot of people saying, well, you know, it's these people are serving their country. But I think we can serve our country just as greatly by standing up when we feel something is wrong. These people who are over there now, all 450,000 of them, I believe, are hostages in a way, too, because they do not have that option. They cannot speak up. They cannot leave. They cannot do anything on their own free will. Unfortunately, it was their choice to get into a life like that. It may not be your choice. The draft could resume any time if this situation escalates or if more such situations occur in the future. As Representative Smith said a few minutes ago on our airwaves, the sanctions are working. It's having an effect. Why are we so impatient that we cannot allow it to continue for a while longer? I mean, imagine if you can actually succeed in getting Saddam out of Kuwait without a bloodbath. I mean, I was watching an episode of Star Trek The Next Generation a couple of weeks ago, you know, and Captain Picard, who represents the you know, the reason and the sanity of our age, as opposed to the kind of craziness and gun-toting of Captain Kirk. He said, we don't want to engage them. If we wind up getting into a war, it will mean that we have failed. And that's something that I think we need to realize here. If we do get into a war, it's because we have failed. And I don't think it's time to admit failure yet.
Well, but in that right, you're correct in the fact that we will fail. And besides that, our country is in a hole right now as it is. There's one thing I'd like to bring up right now, and that these troops that are over there, once we actually start fighting, these people get paid to be in the army. And once they start fighting, they're going to get something called combat pay. We don't have the money to pay these people. See, some of these people are going to die. We're going to have to pay their heirs. We're going to have to start paying out money for stuff that doesn't have a value. You know what I'm saying? We're going to take a human life and that has great value and just diminish the value, and then we're going to pay out American dollars for a dead person.
Well, you know, even
to be dead. I mean, that's like stupid.
Well, yeah, but I mean, money cannot possibly compensate for that kind of a thing. Even though if we were to stop this thing tomorrow and send everybody home, there'd still be lasting scars. This kind of thing cannot just happen and people just forget about it afterwards. Being over there in the desert, wondering if you're going to live through the next day, being away from your family, it's you know, it has an effect. And it's having an effect on all of us, too. Kids today are becoming more cynical than ever based on what's happening to the environment and what could potentially happen tomorrow in the Gulf. Imagine what's happening to the citizens of Israel, all having gas masks and walking around wondering what's going to happen to them next. Plus all the citizens of the other countries in the Gulf region. The people of Iraq.
It's a very small area.
The people of Iraq have already been through a living hell. It's mind-boggling, and we should be working to improve that situation, not worsen it. I think we've got the resources to do that. Let me just go over a couple of things that I was able to find in the Village Times, one of our local newspapers here, a list of vigils and demonstrations, which I think is a really good thing to print. Actually, there was one today I passed by in Port Jefferson. It was a candlelight vigil to honor service people in the Persian Gulf. Now, you might say, well, okay, maybe these people support what's going on over there. I don't know. I don't know if they support or what is going on over there, but the important thing is that you don't forget the people that are there. Whether you support it or not, you can't forget the fact that there's hundreds of thousands of our
people.
Citizens, friends, neighbors, brothers, sisters. They're over there, right? They're human beings just like you, and we've got to support them as individuals, and we've got to remember them as individuals, know their names, know who they are, see their faces. Don't just think of a mass of troops, a mass of faceless beings out of 1984 or something that just march into some territory and claim it. That's not it. These are human beings, and we cannot forget that. So that's why, whether or not you agree with the person next to you as to whether or not we should be over there, don't forget that fact. Okay, that happened today. I saw about 100 people down there, which looked pretty good, I thought.
Well, speaking of remembering people, I think that's very important. And with the terrorist actions that go on, I think just at this moment I'd like to say that every day I think I remember the Klinghoffers and Robbie Steedham, the Navy seaman who was beat to death on the plane,
uh-huh.
on the tarmac. Remember when they took the hostages?
Uh-huh.
And it is important to remember these people. And, you know, because they are people. It's like, I know Marianne Devine said this morning, her brother just joined up in August, and he doesn't think he's going to go because he's untrained. And I said, well, Marianne and I both said, we'll give them 5 months to start the war, and then he'll be over there. And she goes, yeah, that's what I told him.
How about all the people that don't even want to be in the service that will be drafted? They're certainly not untrained, and they're unwilling on top of that, so that's not going to stop them from sending people. They don't necessarily need trained people. They need bodies. They need buffers. They need things to throw in
the
enemy's face.
The people they're bringing there are either, like you said, joined to get an education or possibly because they were just looking for a better life. And this is not a better life. I mean, it's mm-hmm. they're doing nothing to create a better life.
Let's continue with the vigils and demonstrations. Actually, there was one today outside the office of George Hotbruckner. Did you know something about that?
I think that's where Morty was today.
Mort McCluskey.
Yes, I think that's where Mort was today, quite in fact.
Uh-huh. Did he say how it went?
I didn't get a hold of Morty. I was supposed to speak to him earlier, and I got tied up. But
well,
he'll be here tomorrow.
Morty is listening. He can call us and tell us at 632-6901. Or if anybody else, for that matter, was there, let us know what happened. I believe George Hotbruckner voted against the Bush action.
We heard that from Ted Schreiber. Who is it?
It's good to know our USB people are really on top of this thing.
Ted's been doing reporting all day at a commercial radio station, and he believes that George Hotbruckner finally did stand up and say no. He said no to on the vote.
I think he just kind of stood halfway up and sort of said no, but then sat down quickly again. But he's getting to that point. He'll get there eventually. One day he'll stand up and say something, I'm sure. Okay. Then there's a vigil for peace in the Middle East to be held in Garden City. That's on Tuesday, January 15th, from 4 to 5 p.m. And if you want more information on that, get a pen. Contact the Long Island Alliance for Peaceful Alternatives. Their number is 741-4360. Now, there's a couple of marches on Washington. You going to any of these, Cindy?
The one on the 19th, I believe I'm going to be here engineering the broadcast.
That's right. We're going to be broadcasting, I believe, both of them. Let me tell the folks when they are. One is next Saturday, the 19th. It's sponsored by the Coalition to Stop U.S. Intervention in the Middle East. You can reach them at 212-777-1246.
Speaking at that rally on the 19th will be people like Ramsey Clark, former attorney general, who, you know, almost lost his mind dealing with these people in the government.
Uh-huh.
Deborah Jackson, American Association of Jurists, the writer and film producer Michael Moore from Roger and me, and also, of course, William Kunstler will be there on the 19th. For the BAI Pacifica.
Is this in Washington, D.C.? Or
that,
is that the BAI?
They're going to be sent there. These particular people are going to be sent there with a team of reporters to cover the mobilization, and they're going to incorporate live reports and speeches from the podium with in-studio analysis situation discussion.
That'll be broadcast here, too. I think we might also be having local breakaways here at USB as well. So it's all coming together, folks. When something like this occurs, you tune to your community radio station and you hear what's happening on the local front, national front, on the international front. And we hope to be able to serve you in that capacity.
If I was not here, I would be at the rally.
Uh-huh.
And that, you know, and they're asking people, if you do go to D.C., to plan to stay there as long as you possibly can.
Uh-huh. I'd like to definitely go next Saturday, but I don't see anything here about buses leaving from Stony Brook or anything in the area. Do you know if there's plans to start something like that? Because the buses leave from Long Beach. That's kind of
Long Beach in Manhattan. I believe the Action Network, who's working with Kurt Patton, the guy who refused to go from the Army.
Right.
He's the Action Network is, I'm not sure the number, Lister didn't leave it anywhere.
Oh, Lister.
But there was a 212 number for the Action Network, which you possibly got this afternoon, to call as far as getting a bus to Washington, D.C. from the Manhattan area.
Okay, well, I'm sure there's people out there that know what's going on, and hopefully they'll call us, because once you tell us what's going on, obviously a lot more people will know what's happening. So again, recapping that march in Washington, D.C., Saturday, January 19th, sponsored by the Coalition to Stop U.S. Intervention in the Middle East. You can reach them at 212-777-1246. Right now, we know a bus is being organized to leave from Long Beach. And also a march on Washington, D.C., the following Saturday, January 26th. That's sponsored by the National Campaign for Peace in the Middle East. And that's a different group. You can reach them at 212-227-0221. And for that rally, a bus is being organized to leave from Port Jefferson. Other Long Island buses will leave from Great Neck. And you can call Sane Freeze 741-4360 or Peace Smith 798-0778. Do you know anything about the difference between these two rallies, or is this just two different groups having two different rallies?
In D.C., or is these...
These are both in D.C., but on following consecutive Saturdays.
I'm not sure how that's going to work or exactly where the people are going, but I would imagine they're all going to meet at the same place.
Well, I would like to think that there's going to be a rally in Washington, D.C. every week until this thing is over, but if it's going to be one group has their rally one week, one group has a rally the next week, it's
not
going to
have any
small
effect, yeah.
Yeah, so we got to get together on this.
There's also going to be some people at the U.N. Did you read about that, I think, on the 19th?
On the 19th.
Yeah, they're going to gather at the U.N. also, I believe.
Uh-huh.
So if you can't really go to D.C., and you can just get to Manhattan, then I think you should be showing up at the U.N.
And of course, we have our special golf teach-in tomorrow. I'll let Moore tell you about that, and then we'll be back taking phone calls. Our number is 632-6901, area code 516.
I'm going to lay down my sword and shield, and down far away my
January 13th from 6 to 10 p.m. and January 19th from 12 noon to 5 p.m. WSB Stony Brook will be broadcasting WBAI Pacifica Radio's Countdown in the Gulf, War or Peace, national teach-in on the Gulf Crisis.
I'm sorry.
February 13th from 6 to 10 p.m. and January 19th, 12 noon to 5 p.m.
Our phone number is 632-6901, area code 516. We have one open line, and what we're basically talking about tonight is the impending crisis in the Gulf. I guess what we're looking for is a bit of guidance here, because we're here tonight because we're concerned about where it's leading. We're concerned about seeing our friends, neighbors, relatives die horrible deaths. I've heard all kinds of figures being passed around, something like 60,000 people could die in the first couple of weeks. That's on our side. Is it really worth the price? Is it really worth going to war over oil? Is it really anything different than going to war over oil? You know, I think we all pretty much saw the demonstrators in Washington, D.C. yesterday at the Senate in the middle of one of the speeches. These people stood up in the gallery shouting, what is it, no blood for oil or something like that. And it made me feel good to know people were willing to do that, because that's what this is all about. It's about putting your ass on the line, because you got to do that. It's all part of, the war mentality. We're in it, too. We're fighting a war as well as people over there shooting, except our war is a bit more civilized. We're trying to stop that war, and you've got to break the rules to do that. You've got to stand up in front of politicians. You've got to stand up in front of police. You've got to get yourself arrested sometimes. You've got to be loud. You've got to be abrasive, and you've got to have a lot of people who want to shut you up. You know, and that's what it's all about. That's democracy, and that's expressing yourself. Once you give up that right, once you give up you don't have that desire anymore to express yourself, then you've really lost the fight. And I don't want to think about what kind of things will happen once people give in to that. That's why I hope to see people from Stony Brook, from Long Island, from the Northeast, from the whole country start waking up. I've been impressed so far, because at this point, many, many people are aware. And I can't think of any conflict in the past where this many people have been so anxious to stop it before it starts. So, yes, we are getting somewhere as far as mass awareness, but that in itself is not enough if we allow it to happen anyway. 632-6901, we're going to go to the phones right after this.
Now, the trick is with wearing a suit like this is the same trick as living in America today, which is how do you come to terms with wealth and in a world so filled with trouble, can you still have a sense of responsibility? No, I could never strip, for that would be cheap. I prefer to maintain my dignity as an American citizen. Never strip. So I'll now try to wear this gold suit and sing a song of significance and try to have wealth come to terms with responsibility.
Different fights, I was there at the little big farm. I heard many men lying, I saw many more dying, but I ain't a marching anymore. Mexican land, fought in the bloody Civil War. Yes, I even killed my brothers, so many others, but I ain't a marching anymore. anymore. For I marched to the battles of the German trench in a war that was bound to end all wars. Oh, I must have killed a million men. Now they want me back again, but I ain't marching anymore. It's always the old to lead us to the wars. It's always the young to fall. Now look at all we've won with a saber and the gun. Tell me, is it worth it all? For I flew the final mission in the Japanese sky. Set off the mighty mushroom roar. When I saw the cities burning, knew that I was learning that I ain't marching anymore. Now the labor leaders screaming when they close the missile plant. United Fruit screams at the Cuban shore. Call it peace or call it treason. Call it love or call it reason. But I ain't marching anymore. No, I ain't marching anymore.
And that's Phil Oakes. I ain't marching anymore. And I wonder if we really have learned, if we've really gotten someplace. It's too bad Phil Oakes is no longer with us. Hopefully there'll be many more to take his place, because we're sure going to be needing them. Oh. Graham, we shall take some calls here. Whoops. Sorry, I didn't have the right level up there. Okay, that's better. 632-6901, area code 516, talking about the Gulf situation. And here with Cindy, so let's see what's happening. Good evening.
Yeah, how you doing?
Okay, what's up?
Before I get to stuff about Iraq, I just want to say one thing, that I have a friend that likes this girl in Selden, and but she has a boyfriend, and he thinks that they're going to have a relationship.
Okay, make it quick.
Okay, that's it. And all then, right. All right, but this thing in Iraq... If there's a war, we're going to blow them up in 5 days.
What makes you think that?
Because the whole world's against them.
The whole world's against them, but it seems like we're the only ones, really, that are gung-ho into invading.
Yeah, that's true.
Why is that?
That's all I think is going to happen.
Why do you think, though, that we're so into going over there, and you don't see that same kind of talk from other countries?
I don't know. I mean, Bush, I don't know what Bush is doing. I mean, it's over oil, right?
Yeah.
And we can get oil from anywhere, from Dallas, if they still have it down there. But...
Do you think this is a fight about freedom or about oil?
I think it's just oil.
You know, that's something that I've noticed. Almost everyone seems to agree with that. Even the people that support the action say, yeah, it's about oil. And, you know, it's weird, because I don't remember oil being one of the founding premises of our country.
Yeah, I don't know either. I don't know what Saddam Hussein is doing.
You think it'll be a quick end, though?
Yeah, definitely.
Any guess on casualties? Will there be a lot?
Yeah, maybe like 1,000 to 2,000.
Of our men?
Yeah.
And women. Okay, well, that's not a very optimistic view.
Oh.
But I guess it could be worse.
Yep.
Thanks for calling.
Sure.
I know people who think many, many more than that will certainly be...
I think that's a very small estimate. It's going to be like 10 times that at least. So some of you out there are very disillusioned, especially the young, and it's like, it's a lot of people say, you know, there's no jungle we have to burn out. We don't have to burn any jungle out to get to our enemy. There's a lot of clear, wide open spaces, and you're going to see a lot of poison gases. You're going to see flaming bombs that just drop and leave flames for like hundreds of yards. I mean, I can't even imagine, but I kind of think I know what's going to happen.
Mankind has advanced so much in the last couple of decades. And since we've devoted most of our money and research to figuring out new ways to kill each other, well, we're going to be that much more efficient at it, and we're going to have a chance to put our new toys to work and see just how well they do work. And I know a lot of people will be taking notes on this, but we're also going to notice a dramatic increase. As Representative Smith said before, compared to V-Day, and this makes V-Day look like nothing, and this is only the beginning.
It's true. The weapons are so much more advanced at this time than even Vietnam. I mean, poison gas, it's messy. It's real messy.
And this, I read two letters in the same day in Newsday this week that said, without question, we should use nuclear bombs against Iraq. Make it, save thousands of lives. Same rationale for using it on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Save all these lives. So let's do it again. And, you feel sometimes like things are going really good, like you're really getting somewhere. A year ago, that's what I thought. And then suddenly you turn around and you start heading right back down again.
What did they say? This is the year of the child? It's such a joke. I mean, I don't know what to say,
The year of the baby, maybe. But it's not a year for a child, I can tell you that. Good evening.
Hi, Eric. I heard you heard you say a couple of weeks ago that Saddam Hussein is a force that should be reckoned with and should be reckoned with accordingly. And now that I guess you've changed your opinion.
I wouldn't say I've changed my opinion. I've never thought that that going in with all this firepower is really going to accomplish much. I mean, yeah, we'll win in the end. I don't have a doubt about that. We will win in the end, but at what cost? I think sitting tight for another month, another 2 months, however long it takes with the sanctions, will be effective.
Mm-hmm.
How does it hurt, you know?
Yeah. Also, I think that it is a war of freedom and not of oil, being that, I think this whole oil thing is a total gig.
Well, Kuwait wasn't a free country, was it?
Of course it was. It wasn't ruled over by a dictator.
No, it was independent, but come on, the place was a monarchy. There was no freedom of expression or speech or religion or anything like that.
Everybody was rich, everybody was happy, and now stripped and raped of their possessions.
Oh, yeah, they were, but I'm saying it was not a country that stands for anything that we stand for. Neither is Saudi Arabia. And we're not in this to protect democracy. We're in this pretty much to protect our interests, which in this case are financial purely, I see.
Also, to answer your question before, there's a group of high school students in my school in Kamsuag that are organizing a bus out to Washington, D.C.
Oh, great. Give us all the details, please.
I'm going to find out Monday.
Uh-huh.
If you interested, you can contact Andrew Goldberger through me. You know, my name is Rick. I've been down at the station a few times.
Let me give you a phone number to call, okay? It's a recording, and you can leave all the when you do find out the information, leave it there. We will announce it over the airwaves then, okay?
Okay, sounds good.
You got a pen?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, yeah, okay.
Okay, write this down. And this goes to anybody else, too, that has information that they want to pass along to us, and they want to make sure it gets to the right people and gets out over the airwaves. The number is 632-6498. And just leave the information there. Tell us what it is you're organizing, what it is you're going to be doing. I think it's great that you guys are doing this. I mean, if my high school was this aware when I was going back, back in Ward Melville High School, if they were that awake, I would have been really happy at the time, but they weren't. They were in a coma for the most part.
Yeah, it was, I guess it was the 70s. It was pretty...
The 70s was the decade that you should have slept through if you didn't.
They had a great basketball team.
Yeah, the disco decade, Marie Osmond and all that. But that's,
this is your future we're talking about. And in fact, it's your present we're talking about. So you damn well better take an interest. And, you got to get it through to more people, more people in your school and people that you know. And I think you'll get a good response. I really do.
Okay, I appreciate you letting me have my say. And, I'll talk to you another day.
Okay, thanks for calling. And we really do appreciate people who care. Good evening.
Yeah, hi.
How you doing?
Yeah, I think Saddam Hussein is not doing the right thing what he's doing because of the hostages that he took.
Uh-huh.
And about letting him off.
Yeah, but you notice now, we're not even thinking about the hostages. We don't even remember that.
Is that what started it all?
That's what I thought. Well, here's how it rests in my head. We sent our troops over there to avoid having Saudi Arabia be invaded by Saddam.
Right.
Is that not right? That's what I thought we sent our troops over there for. Now, okay, he hasn't made any move to invade Saudi Arabia.
But the hostages are another thing also.
The hostages were the next thing after that. And then he backed down. I mean, he has backed down on several things. We're saying that he has not flinched at all. That's not entirely true. I mean, yeah, he is still in Kuwait, but he did let all the hostages go. There are no more hostages. And, you know, it's he has also said that he will get out of Kuwait if there is a linkage to the Palestinian issue. I don't think that linkage is correct, but he didn't say he would get out of Kuwait before.
Yeah, but so, isn't it like he won't back off because other countries think he's not...
We need to provide him with some way of saving face. And I know Bush doesn't want to do that, but come on, let's get real here. You tell somebody, you know, you've seen fights in parking lots. You know, people are not going to just go away because you tell them to. You've got to give them some way of being able to slink out of it gracefully. And I don't think we'll lose that much if we do that. You know, give him an island or something if that's what's going to make him happy and keep him out of the rest of the country and save tens of thousands of lives. Maybe it's worth it.
That lady that's talking with you.
This is Cindy.
Hi.
Cindy is here quite a bit if you listen to this radio station.
Who is she?
Yes. Cindy.
What does she do there?
What do you do here, Cindy? Cindy does everything here.
Yeah, I don't agree with anything she's saying because she thinks she... Well, she said that gas or whatever, those bomb gas things were messy.
Uh-huh.
How would she know anything about that?
How would I know? I don't know. I've been alive on the earth, I think, a little longer than you, and I've seen the war on the television.
Yeah, have you got one thrown in your face?
No, I haven't had one thrown in my face, but I don't think you ever got to see the Vietnam War on television.
Well, wait, sir, what is your point? What is your side of this?
What is my side of it?
Yeah. What is it that you're arguing?
I don't think she should say everything without knowing anything. Why doesn't she go over there?
Wait a minute, Eric. Did you watch the news, okay, in the last 2 days and see that the people in Israeli covering the doors, the keyholes, the very holes the keys go in because the gas is going to go through there? It's going to go under the doors. It's going to go through the cracks. It's going to be everywhere.
Go over there and then tell me about it.
Well, wait, I don't understand what your point is, sir. Are you saying she's wrong that gas doesn't have an effect on people, or are you saying that...
But how does she know everything about it?
Well,
I have a very vivid imagination. I'm sorry if you don't.
Oh, yeah,
I read books, too.
Well,
I read books.
Wait a minute. I don't understand. I mean, look, I can understand a valid argument here, but what are you saying? You're saying that gas does not have an effect, or are you saying that you've got to experience something before you can say anything about it? What?
I'm saying she went on, goes on your show like she's almighty and knows everything.
I'm sorry if I come across that way to you. Excuse me.
You should say sorry a bunch of times. I don't think you know what you're talking about.
Okay, I've had enough of this. Let's give some other people a chance. Good evening. Go ahead.
Hi.
Go ahead.
On the air?
Yes, you are. But you're going to have to say something. That's the deal.
Okay, Eric. Okay.
All right, go ahead.
My name is Fred.
Hi, Fred.
Hi.
Fred, do you have these big gaps in your life normally, or just
no,
when
just
you're talking?
No, my radio is on. It's like this.
Well, turn your radio down so you won't get confused, and talk over the air so we can be amused.
Second, okay?
Yes. I'm good at rap poetry, aren't I?
Okay, got rid of it.
All right.
I used to listen to Brain Damage all the time, but now I'm away at college.
Uh-huh, and you got cured, huh?
No, I miss it, actually.
Yeah?
There's nothing like this at Cornell.
Well, you can always call up our special number and have it piped through the phone line to you.
Okay.
Yeah, but that's something else.
I heard what you were saying about, like, Congressman Hofbrückner earlier.
Right.
I think I watched, like, 6 hours of the debate today.
Uh-huh. Wasn't that something else? Where did you watch it, on Channel 13?
Channel 13. I could hardly see it, but I could hear it.
Yeah.
I thought some of the senators, well, congressmen didn't really make too effective arguments, but the senators, I thought they were really good.
Uh-huh.
Mr. Kerry of Massachusetts,
uh-huh,
and Mr. Hatfield this morning.
And can you elaborate on what they said?
Well, Hatfield, I thought, had a lot of guts because he was the only one who, he didn't vote. He voted no on both Senate resolutions. He just said we should get the heck out of there now.
Uh-huh.
Didn't vote for the sanctions or for the force.
I wonder how many people feel that way, that we should just abandon the whole thing. That's kind of interesting.
Well, I don't know if I'm entirely convinced of that, but I'm definitely... It makes no sense to go to war now. It makes no sense whatsoever to me. I listened to 6 hours of those debates, and I thought about it a lot. And it just makes no sense. What's the rush?
If there is a right time to go to war, when is it?
You see, for me... Okay, I've had a lot of arguments, like... before I came home from vacation, because I have several friends who are very pro-Israeli, and they want war, basically. And I kept arguing that, really, I don't see that Kuwait is going to help Israel or anybody else. And I don't think that... You see, they think it's like... they're arguing that it's like Hitler in the 30s and that we have to stop this aggression.
Uh-huh.
I really don't think that's valid at all.
No, and you can't... You know, it dilutes what Hitler was so much if you compare everyone from Noriega to, to Saddam Hussein, to Colonel Gaddafi. You know, if you say they're all Hitlers... Then when a real Hitler comes along, we're gonna think you're crying wolf.
Yeah, absolutely. That's exactly what I was arguing. I think they're exaggerating. They're using Hitler because everybody, everything's World War II, and Hitler is kind of the paradigm of like the just war and everything.
Right.
I'm gonna be doing a teaching when I get back to Cornell
for
my church on the Persian Gulf situation and stuff.
Great. That's really good to hear.
And I've been reading a lot of stuff on pacifism and just war theory in the church. And according to my research, I mean, this just does not like meet the criteria of even just war. It really doesn't.
Uh-huh. Well, fill us in as you get more details on your teachings and anything else that you might be involved in.
Yeah,
so
well, I'm going to be upstate. You know, once I called from up there last year, but like there was somebody else doing your show, so I was really bummed about that.
Oh no.
Yeah, sometimes I'm away. I might be in D.C. over the next couple of weeks. Who knows? Who knows what's going to happen?
Okay.
So, we'll keep the word out over the air, though, and keep us filled in as
okay,
to anything happens.
Okay, you do that. I listen to this show all the time when I was in high school.
Great.
Like I said.
Well, we helped structure you as a person, didn't we?
One question before I go.
Yes.
What's that cut that you play at the end of the show, the song about pollution?
That's a song from Roger Waters off an album came out in 1970 called The Body. And it's about two or three songs spliced together. It's kind of a weird album, a concept album. And I don't actually know the title of the song. One of them is called Breathe. I know that much. Of course, he came out with a song called Breathe on Dark Side of the Moon as well. But this was before that. And it's a very nice piece.
Yeah, I've been listening to it ever since you put that in there.
Uh-huh.
And I always wondered what it is.
Yeah, that is what it is, Roger Waters, and I'll make a point of playing it tonight as I go off.
Okay.
Thanks for calling.
Yep, thanks.
Good evening.
Yeah, how you doing?
Okay, what's up?
I don't know who it was, but I don't think it was the last person. I don't think it was the person before. I don't know if it was the person before.
Well, whatever. What about it?
There's just some person that just calls up every week. I think his name should just be Brain Damage because he calls up way too many times.
Okay, all right. Well, what are you calling about?
What am I calling about?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I hear you guys talking about, appropriately talking about the Persian Gulf crisis.
Right.
Of course, and...
It's about to become a war, not a crisis anymore. But
hmm?
It's soon going to be relabeled the Persian Gulf War, not the Persian Gulf Crisis.
Yeah, unfortunately.
How do you feel about that?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I know somebody that's there.
Do you?
Yeah, so, I mean, identifying with them, I guess it's...
Have you been able to stay in touch with... Have you been able to stay in touch with that person?
No, I'm close friends with the person, but, I mean, I've, known the person for a while.
Uh-huh.
You know, friends in him or whatever, hung out with him once or twice, you know, nothing that great, you know, but he's a really nice kid, you know.
How old is he?
Sure, there's probably... I just graduated high school 2 years ago, maybe, because he's 18 or 19.
Boy, that's... I mean, just starting life and winding up in a place like that is... It's just, God, I can't imagine it. So
Eric, you better not imagine.
No,
it.
I
might call back.
I have to stop imagining.
How do you know this is going to happen?
So, sir, what are your views on this? I mean, you're of draft age, obviously. They could reenact the draft overnight if they wanted to. How do you feel?
How do I feel if I was drafted or something?
Well, how do you feel right now when we're standing on the press?
Now, getting back to that friend, point I was trying to make, though.
Right.
You know, I'm sure there's a lot of kids like my friend, you know, just nice, you know, down to earth, you know, happy kind of kids. You know, I'm sure there's like a million of them out there that, I mean, I just hate to see, you know, kids like that, or anybody, you know, for that matter, just
Right. These are people that we know. These are our friends,
exactly,
our relatives.
Everybody out there, you know.
I don't think we've ever had this before in a war where we've had sophisticated media coverage where we can bring instantaneous transmissions back via satellite and all that. We never really thought of our soldiers as people unless we knew them personally. But now we actually are able to see their faces and know their names and hear what they say live, uncensored. And I think that makes such a difference. And I think that's why people are reacting so strongly. All right. Thanks for calling. Good evening.
Hi. How you doing?
Okay. How are you?
Okay. Well, I've been watching the debates also all day today. And, well, they made a lot of excellent points, I think. But I don't really think that we can change what President Bush wants to do. I think that the vote is going to be swayed towards what President Bush wants, because that seems to be how it's been all along.
Uh-huh.
What do you feel about, how do you feel about that?
I'm not sure I understand what you mean, that's how it's been all along.
Right.
Can you just elaborate a little bit?
Well,
Cindy, do you have any?
Well, no, I mean, I'm listening to what the caller says, and he is right that the people at this point, this is what I said earlier to you about people taking control. People have to really do some type of action, whether it, you know, be, I mean, stopping airplanes or, you know, telling your best friends in the service, please don't go, I don't want to see you die, and literally, physically, maybe kidnapping them. And, you know, not allowing them to go. There's other way, you know, I don't know. In some ways, Bush is right. He's got the nation, like, on a crest of a wave, and we're going to go over. I mean.
Right, but how much do you think the protest is really going to help? I mean.
Oh, I think it's, well, let me put it this way. I think it's helped a lot already in the fact that, look at how much trouble Bush and the rest are going to make sure that they follow the rules. And go to the UN and go to the Congress and make sure everything is done properly instead of just marching right in there. And I think the reason that is happening is because of the furor in the past over things like Grenada and Panama and other invasions and things where it didn't quite go the way it was supposed to go. And people got angry and people had demonstrations. I think it does have an effect. And I think those people who stood up in the Senate gallery yesterday did have an effect, even though they... you know, they disturb things. I think you have to disturb things now and then, you know?
Right. Well, I still think that that it's inevitable what's going to happen. I mean, no matter how much steps they're going to go through,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's still going to happen. You know, what I think President Bush doesn't want to back down. He wants to be big, bad United States, and he wants to go in there, and he wants to... you know, make like he's the all-powerful leader of the U.S. and he's going to, you know, make everything all better and make Kuwait free and, you know, I mean, get real.
Yeah, but sir, if the majority of people don't want him to do that,
uh-huh.
then shouldn't that make a difference? And right now it's very, very close. I mean, the Senate vote today was 51-47 or 52-47 rather. And I think the majority of people in New York certainly don't want this to happen. So it's very close no matter where you go.
Right.
So, I mean, he's got to be looking at that. If the majority of people are against this thing, he's got to listen to that.
And I hope I really hope he does.
Okay. Thanks for calling.
Okay.
632-6901. We've got a few extra minutes. Good evening.
Yeah, hello.
How you doing?
Okay. Yeah, I wanted to respond to your last call there that, in fact, that George Bush is not King George, and yet we only have a duty to obey the Constitution. As you point out, the Senate vote was a clear indication of the importance of demonstrations, writing congressmen, calling congressmen, organizing teach-ins, etc. If the Congress believes, you know, that everybody is you know, ready to go to action. Administration wants, then of course they're going to vote that way. Their you know, political reflection is in the vote. So, you know, I think that it's crucial to keep up the keep our voices heard. And
uh-huh.
I just wanted to make mention of a couple of vigils in the area.
Go ahead.
Okay. Starting on Monday morning, the local high schools, Ward Melville and Smithtown, et cetera, are going to be rallying over by the 7-Eleven on 347 at 8 o'clock in the morning and then marching over to Congressman Huck Buckner's office.
Wow.
Rallying there. And it's a student strike, by the way. That's a statewide or maybe nationwide strike. And this is how the local students are organizing. Other students are heading towards New York City and rallying at the Times Square recruiting station. And
is this all happening the same time?
Well, I suppose so. I know that the I was at the Hawk Bruckner rally this afternoon.
Uh-huh.
The weekly, you know, every Saturday at 12, and it'll continue on as long as need be. So
how many people were there today?
It was close to about 50 or so,
uh-huh,
or more. And all the passing motorists, with the exception of very few, were very supportive, honking for peace and waving peace signs and flashing lights, and everybody was really supportive of everyone there.
Where exactly is Hawk Bruckner's office?
It's a couple of lights east of Nichols Road on 347. I couldn't tell you what the crossroad is, but it's in a like a professional building there, and it's on the, you know, heading as you head east on 347, it's on the south side of 347, and it's across from Setauket Woods. There's some parkland there, but anyway.
Okay. Yeah.
And then Monday rush hour. There's going to be a vigil for peace. People are going to rally at the Hop Hog at the New York State Office Building. By the district court, across from Blydenburg Park, and people are going to be there assembled at the Armed Forces Memorial. Hopefully we won't have to erect another memorial in the event that there is a war in the Persian Gulf.
I sure hope so, too.
And then finally on the 15th, the U.S. imposed deadline for Iraq to leave Kuwait is there'll be visuals, of course, all over the country, but as far as locally, in New York at the United Nations, starting at 12 noon, there'll be a massive rally there, and that'll continue on throughout the day and into the evening. And then, of course, like you mentioned, the march on Washington on the 19th, and then the 26th. As far as bus transportation from Stony Brook, students are assembling a bus, and locals, people can call for a $15 round trip to Washington for the 26th, 689-7290. That's 689-7290. And for the 19th, a bus leaves from Westbury, and that's $25, 338-4662.
Do you know if there's any chance of getting a bus from Stony Brook for that day?
For the 19th?
Yeah.
No, I unfortunately haven't heard of any buses for the 19th leaving from Stony Brook, but maybe, you know, calling the, I guess, you know, St. Freese or the Long Island Alliance or something like that. maybe they have some information, you know, from some Eastern. I called the coalition and furthest east they had was this 338 number in
uh-huh.
Westbury that I told you. So
okay, well, if there is more details coming in on that, we'll certainly report them here. Thanks so much for passing all that along to us, and do let us know how things go at these rallies.
Okay.
All right.
Definitely encourage, you know, your listeners to exercise their constitutional rights, because, you know, like you say, people in you know, that we're supposedly gonna go and shed blood for, like the people in Kuwait, for example, they don't have a constitution because it was suspended by their, you know, their leader. We have a right to speak, and that's what makes our country great, and that's why we have to support our constitution.
We not only have a right to speak, we have an obligation to speak.
That's right.
Good
night.
Hold on. I just want to thank the caller for participating in the process of democracy. I think it's very important. And I want to personally thank you so for showing up at that rally today. I think it's important.
Thanks, and I hope to see you all next Saturday there and at any of the other vigils.
Okay, thanks very much again.
Okay, good evening.
There's such a variety of things to go to, you know?
Yes, there's something for everybody. There's no excuse for you not to show up at something.
No excuse for complacency here. By the way, power surge will be beginning in a couple of minutes. We just have a few extra minutes here because of the vast amount of calls we're getting and because of the importance of the subject. So have no fear, power surge will be here. Good evening.
Hello, Eric.
Yeah, you're very, very loud. Go ahead.
Okay, my name is Jim Calcagno. Just want to say one particular thing that I find very distressing, besides everything to do with this Mexican standoff between these two madmen, is, and you mentioned it before, the two letters that were in Newsday about a nuclear attack. People don't seem to realize that this would probably be the beginning of the end, not a quick ending, because besides the thousands and the hundreds of thousands of people who will be killed over there, the low-level radiation that's going to affect all our soldiers there, and the world will see, first of all, that a nuclear attack is effective. Well, the other crazy people. Most people in this country agree with that it has to be done. It has to be taken care of. You mentioned that our brothers and sisters are all the soldiers over there, but you forget also that the millions of other Arabians, Iraqis, everybody else are human beings also. Most of them, women, children, civilians, don't want to be blown up, don't want to have this war. It's the politics, it's the military, the politicians doing all this. Mm-hmm. They're our brothers and sisters on this planet as much as our soldiers are. We have to be concerned about them also.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And like Patrick Moynihan said yesterday, it's not an international crisis. It's one nasty little country attacking another nasty littler country.
Yes.
And so it's our oil interest. And I don't see what the big deal is, like Haziz said the other day. If we're really interested in Mideast peace, then we could talk, and there can be no war. He's saying that us and Israel have been messing with the defenseless, homeless Palestinians. Now he's messing with a little country, Kuwait. We can do it, they can do it, he's saying.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, so what? What are you going to do about it? So he's saying, what would be the big deal if we stopped and talked and tried to work something out? It'd be a loss of face, that's all, but it could prevent a world war, a world disaster.
Okay, thanks so much for calling, sir. We're kind of in a hurry to get out, but thanks again
Thank you.
For calling. And I think one of the things that can really help out is as much personal contact as possible between people. I mean, individual people from different countries. If you knew an Iraqi or two, it would be a nice time to make contact with them. Let's take two more real quick calls, and then we'll be out of here, and Raz will be in. Good evening.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Yeah, I just want to say something really quick.
Real quick, come on.
About that lady that was there?
Yeah.
Is she like a reporter for it?
We are not at liberty to reveal her true intentions.
But she's just giving you information about it?
She's giving us, yes, information.
Yeah, can I just ask her about the tear gas situation?
Go ahead.
Sounds pretty scary about what happened.
About tear gas?
Yeah, about the gas bombs.
Uh-huh.
Do you know what happens to you?
Okay, she'll answer your question on the radio. Thanks for calling.
Well, it depends on what kind of gas they're using. Obviously, I've been hearing a great talk of mustard gas.
Uh-huh.
Is that what it is? And basically, I think it can kill you without even breathing it. It just goes right into your skin.
It's pretty sick what they've come up with. And I suggest people look at what's happened to Iranians and other people in Iraq.
Read the Nation magazine. I don't know what to say.
Read a lot of magazines. Don't just stop at Newsday and the Times. Read a lot of things and you'll learn a lot. I mean, we can't go into all the detail that's presented there, obviously, although we probably will be trying in the next few days. But there are weapons out there that would literally make your blood boil. Good evening. Go ahead, sir. Ma'am?
Yes, hello.
Yes, go ahead.
Is this Stony Brook?
Yes, it is.
Okay, great. Well, the reason why I'm calling is
Yeah?
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yes, I'd like to get on the air with this Eric, I believe his name is.
Go ahead. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey, great. The radio is up. Eric, I have to agree with you. I think the fact that these protests are going on are helping the situation.
Uh-huh.
I think they're helping Saddam Hussein stay where he is.
Why is that?
He's got CNN. He's got all our reports over here. If we would just remain United Nations resolves to limit this persecution where it starts right now that people have been complaining about for so long, like Tiananmen Square, the situation in South Africa. All these problems have arisen before, and we've did nothing about them, and we've had many, many complaints from people such as yourself on the left side of the issue. And now that we do something about it, we rally the United Nations behind it. You guys don't want to do anything about it.
Well,
when it comes push to comes to shove, you don't want to realize what's going on.
Well, it's about truth, really. You say this is our resolve. Well, if we don't agree, then how can it be our resolve? You see, if the majority of people don't want something, and if they speak out against it, then obviously it's not something we want to do. And the difference is that in this country, we are able to do that, and we have the obligation to exercise that right.
We did that today.
I'm sorry?
We did that today.
Right, and I'm acknowledging that that our representatives voted against that. Yes, they have voted for a particular thing. I happen to think it's a mistake.
Oh, they voted for it. They voted to stop Saddam Hussein.
Right, they voted against something that I wanted them to vote for, namely I believe it was the Gephardt Amendment, that would have allowed the sanctions to work. I believe the sanctions are working. I believe they'll continue to work. Now we're going to see whether or not they're right. We are going to see if they've taken the right track. But are you saying, though, that all the debate is bad, that we shouldn't have that kind of debate?
No, the debate is excellent. The debate is excellent. But the protests that are starting up before anything happens, the initiatives that we're taking today do not demand a war. All they say is that the president has got the authority to use action if Saddam Hussein chooses not to leave when he was told to leave over a month ago. If you want, like Smith was saying before, I was listening to your interview, give it till the 15th of February. What's the difference? He knew 30 days before the 15th of January he had to be out of there. Now it's the 15th of February. It's another 30 days. What makes you think he's going to leave then?
Personally, I don't think the man's going to respond very well to ultimatums. I just don't think he's going to do that at all, no matter how many ultimatums you give him.
Well, the letters. He slapped our president in the face by not taking a letter from him, a common letter explaining what's going on.
Well, I'd love to be able to read that letter. Have you seen what was in the letter?
No. They won't release it until, I think that they didn't want to release it because of some of the... Oh, they did release it, I just heard.
They did? Well,
and by the way, there's been a lighter point. Hockenberger did make like a 3-minute speech with charts and everything like that, and he voted no.
Uh-huh. Okay, sir, thanks for calling. We're out of time, but I hope to hear from you again in weeks to come. And all the other people we didn't get to, we're sorry about that, but it's on the positive side, I think we'll have something interesting to talk about for many weeks to come. That's going to just about do it for us here at Brain Damage. Cindy, I want to thank you very much for coming by.
Oh, yeah, welcome, Eric.
Hope to see you again in future weeks.
Tomorrow night we'll have the hour discussion and
That's
call
right.
in after the golf teaching.
That's right. Raz, I want to thank you for letting us have some extra time and wish you the best. Wish you the best in Power Surge, so stay tuned for that coming up next. And stay tuned to WUSB for information on this crisis as it happens and as it continues. Stay awake, people. The night's going to be long.
Insane, inhumane games we play. policy. I hate politics. Politics sucks. Congress sucks. Saddam Hussein laughs at us in his chair. He's like, I dare them. It's like those drug addict, junkie Americans wouldn't even stand up. The power of Allah. That's what he says. He says, we will die for a cause, and they will die for money. Let's see who lasts. And plus, the Iraqi citizens, they can't even say, like, they can't even say, hey, we don't want to start a war. We don't want to fight a war. They have no choice. In America, we're the ones that say we can have a war or not. So he's just waiting for us to leave with our tail between our legs, basically. All right, everybody still breathing? Yes, who cares? That's what I say. All I want to know is a basic one question here on the power surge. And I hear the static, too. I do.
You do hear the static?
Yeah, it's a crazy static. It's like a... But if anybody hears it out there, let me tell me. 632-6901. Oh, we have a lot of tickets to give away tonight on the Power Surge. Cannibal Corpse and a whole lot of stuff, plus Power Surge t-shirts, invites to the Power Surge final party, which is 3 weeks from now. We only have 3 shows left, but in those 3 shows, we still have one question to ask, right?
Who is number one?
That's us, the Power Surge.